Spider-Man, Spider-Man does whatever a spider can. Spins a web any size, catches thieves just like flies. Look out, here comes a Spider-Man.
Should be from now on, Keith, kind of a dick callback.
He was even mad that I said that, actually. He said,
I know he was.
That was even funnier to me, is that, like, wait, you called me a dick, and I'm not even allowed to own that you called me a dick. Like, it's not, you're not okay that I am, like, I was fine with you calling me a dick, but you're not okay with me being fine with it. It's just, it's just crazy.
Can you believe Lady Death on Kickstarter is up to 60 grand?
Oh, my God. Maybe we'll add Steven and then you can tell him.
They were only at 50.
I don't know. Maybe don't tell Steven.
Hello.
Hey.
No. I won't tell Steve that. No, I never would.
What are we talking about?
Lady Death.
Oh. The other Kickstarter that's going on actually.
Yeah, 60 grand.
Yeah, that is nuts.
Apparently it.
And if you've ever read Lady Death, it is really, really not a good thing.
No, but I bet you my father-in-law would be in for that Kickstarter.
Yeah?
He's a big fan of the...
No, I haven't read Lady Death before.
My father-in-law's a big fan of the 90s boob books.
Okay.
He's the one you bought Lost Girls for,
that's
wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, and I got him some prints of Lindsner at one of the shows.
Well, the Lindsner thing I can actually understand.
Dawn. Yeah, it's a couple of some Dawn.
I mean, I'm not a stranger to the bad girl books of the 90s. I supported the Razor Kickstarter, and that was about the worst. God, that guy's still sending me free comic books.
Hey, not bad. That's a good deal.
Oh, it's awesome. I love getting free comic books. But he also said in the year and a half since I supported a Kickstarter, he's on his third marriage within that time. Which he also feels need to update me on.
You know, there is an off button on those updates, right?
But then I'd miss the free comics.
Oh, that is Hobson's choice. There's how do you solve that one?
And it's kind of entertaining.
I supported a couple of Dave Sim ones, and the updates aren't as frequent. But they're like a novella when they come. They're just like page after page after page of stuff. And I'm like, somewhere in here, you're either going to ask me for more money or give me something free. I'd like you to get to that.
But you knew, when you sign your name to anything Dave Sims, you know it's a contract with the devil. The man published entire issues of Leather Pages.
True.
And you obviously write his writing. You got through Church and State.
I got through all the way to the end. And by the end, even...
Yeah.
I think even Dave Sim wasn't reading it by the end from the way it's written.
I'm not familiar with this book. What book is that?
Cerebus.
Cerebus?
Cerebus is the...
No, I haven't
read
that.
It ended... half dozen or 8 years ago now, so it's been over for a while now. But it's the longest running Canadian comic ever, and one of the longest sustained narratives in fiction, period.
Wow.
It was 300 issues following one long set, like one character through the entire story. So he had lots of offshoots. There were issues where Cerebus wasn't even in them, but it is one, like, that character's life. All the way to the end.
And the thing was, with issue one, he said this is going to be 300 issues. And it was exactly. He made the entire run.
Oh, wow.
Any comic book store will have what we call the phone books of reprints. And I would actually highly recommend the first three.
I would recommend 2 through 4.
Come on, I like the early ones where he's just Conan the Barbarian as aardvark.
Yeah, that was, the original concept was that it was...
I know exactly what that is. Yeah. I know what we're talking about.
Yeah,
now.
So that was... I mean, the original concept was that it was basically a knockoff of Conan using a talking aardvark as his lead character. Yeah. And then after the first couple of years, he made this decision that instead of just telling sword and sorcery stories, he could tell any kind of story. And he told political stories. He had service as the Pope for a few years. He was prime minister for a while.
Oscar Wilde gets like several issues for no apparent
reason. He spends like a year with Oscar Wilde. And then he spends a year with F. Scott Fitzgerald. Again, for no particular reason, just because Tim wanted to write about F. Scott Fitzgerald and he had this way to tell stories. So, yeah, unfortunately, later on in life, Sim became very misogynistic and I shouldn't say misogynistic so much as anti-feminist is what he would call himself.
Mm.
And he also he was sort of born again, but this merged version of Judaism and Christianity that was kind of his own thing. And that's like the last 4 years of Cerebus are really like Cerebus basically retires to, be the religious leader of the world he's in and writes a Bible, which is a variation of the Old Testament. And it's like, it is as self-indulgent as that sounds. It's like giant swaths of just text.
But the great thing about those books is by the end I was getting the issues and I'd skip the story completely and just read the letters pages because they were awesome. Mostly women taking offense to other stuff he said in the last letter pages.
That actually makes me kind of want to pledge to the Kickstarter he's got going on right now.
Does he have another one? I think he does have one.
Yeah, he's got a
archive number.
Yeah, because he's raising money. None of the comics were digitized, of course. They were all done traditional method. They were never even scanned. They were done they're done on film for print.
Wow.
It's like they were all done old school. So none of them are available. Like none of them were available digital. So the first Kickstarter he did was to digitize issue 25 to about 50. Which is the second volume of Cerebus. So now he's into, like, they're slowly working through the issues. They're slowly releasing them on Comixology. But they're selling prints and things like that to fund the project now. So it's kind of, because it's got a bit of momentum because people are buying them as they come up with Comixology. But at the same time, it's expensive to take these from original materials, scan them, retouch them, make them digital ready. So, in 300 issues, it's a 6,000 page story. So it'll be a while putting all this together.
I hope he does do the letters pages too, because they put out a trade of that. I think I have it around here.
I think the letters pages are in the Comixology because the Comixology forms have the book. I think they have all the content that was in the single issues rather than in the phone books. And they have back matter, and the back matter is insane. Like the first one he put out, the back matter is all of the purchase orders for that issue from all of the distributors at the time. Cause he kept everything. Like it is completely mental, some of the stuff that's in there. It's like literally receipts for 500 copies to like.
Well, didn't he do some sort of visual commentary on the first
one? Yeah, I've never
one?
Seen it.
I thought that was okay.
He did do something.
Because you got the first one.
I supported it at a low level though. I just got I just got some swag. Like I got some signed stuff and some signed stuff, a couple of rare things. That was all I got. And then the next one was funnily enough, the second Kickstarter he did was to pay for how much they screwed up on the cost of shipping on the first Kickstarter. So they actually ended up in debt at the end of the first Kickstarter.
The Kickstarter.
So yeah, they actually they did have to do a Kickstarter for the Kickstarter because they were like $5,000 or $10,000 in debt at the end of the first Kickstarter, having screwed up all of their shipping. And I will say, they shipped me my stuff twice, so clearly they had a lot of problems. I got all of my incentives twice. So yeah, they had some problems. It was huge. Like they did.
You got a sketch I could buy off.
They did something like a 70,000. I have like an extra signed number zero. I think is what I got.
Okay. Yeah. I don't need that.
Well, and it's signed to me, so I've got like two copies. Yeah. And it's like a 64-page comic. So this thing. I need a service.
Oh, this is podcast gold. If only we were actually doing the podcast.
I don't know. Well, I'm recording. So I mean, we can. This is like a cold open on Saturday Night Live. We just like went into the show. Brett just has to find an entry point, and then like 3 minutes into the show, this is like those like newer movies where they open and stuff happens, and then the name of the movie comes in, like goes up 5 minutes into it.
Or right.
I was actually listening to another podcast today, and it was with they were interviewing Mel Brooks. An hour into the podcast, Mel Brooks says, "Are we going to do this thing?" It's like we've been going for an hour.
That was great. I would listen to that. Which one's that? I love Mel Brooks.
The Nerdist.
The Nerdist. Oh wow. Yeah. Okay, I'm gonna look that
one. I've never listened to that one. I've heard it recommended before.
It's really good. The only problem is he gets way too many just mediocre comedians.
Okay.
But he does three interviews a week, so usually once a week there's one guy I want to listen to.
Well. All right, well we're going to start the episode. Brett can decide where the episode starts from all of the 3 or 4 minutes of 5 minutes of chatter. Ayo, and here we go. It is episode 127 of We Talk Comics. And I am your host, Keith. We're going to introduce ourselves this week by recommending a different podcast. After you listen to all of the 127 episodes plus specials of We Talk Comics, you have some extra time because I assume you don't have a job and you need other podcasts. I'm going to recommend Star Wars Minute. This is a non-comics podcast. Shocking. It is. They've been running this for a couple of years. They analyze Star Wars movies 1 minute at a time. Every episode is taking, for example, minute 35 of Return of the Jedi was, I think, the last one I listened to. So it starts with Luke doing this, and it ends with Han doing that. 1 minute. And then they talk for about 20 minutes to talk about everything in minute detail that's in that scene. It is insane. It is the OCD to the max of Star Wars, and I absolutely love it. Star Wars Minute. I'm joined by co-host Chris.
Yes, and I will recommend the B-Movie Cast. Typically, it's a three-hour podcast about B-movies. They watch one movie every week. Today, I listened to their the Shaft episode. Did not mention the movie until an hour 20 in. Briefly summarized the movie in 5 minutes, and then took letters for the rest of the podcast. It was a great one. I actually really enjoyed it, but really could up their actual movie content for a three-hour podcast. If you like rambling, like I'm doing now, the B-Movie Cast.
And we are joined with Calgary Creator Summit alumni, Stephen, Charles, and is it Rosia? All right, yes. Stephen Charles Rosia, who joined us for the summit for the first time a couple of months ago, and you got us something happening. First, what podcast do you listen to that's not us? That you know, when you're done with when you're done listening to our episode, what do you listen to next?
Oh geez, well I'm gonna be listening to that Mel Brooks one apparently. actually, the first podcast I ever listened to was the two summit ones we did right before I jumped into that summit. And those are the only ones I have listened to.
Oh, I like that. I like that as a recommendation. Other episodes of our own show.
I haven't listened to many other podcasts.
Well, if we're allowed to do ones from our own show, I'd recommend Long Brock's Graveyard, a podcast we distribute ourselves. If you like old school comic books, I'm changing my answer. That guy doesn't ramble at all. Nice, short, 40-minute podcast, chock full of information.
Also, the history of Malibu Comics, I'll plug that one. That was a fantastic episode, and one of our most popular in We Talks Comics history. And I'm not entirely sure you were alive when Malibu Comics was being published, Steve, but you know, a little look into the dark, into the long, dark history of comics.
That would have been a precursor to Image in some way, wouldn't it? One of them, anyway.
They distributed, the first year Image was around, Malibu distributed them. So they weren't involved in the editorial and the comics themselves. They were only only responsible for the distribution, setting them up through printing and distribution. So helping them with that part of it, and the deal lasted a year. So we do, that's covered in the episode actually, and some secrets in there.
I think it was like 7 comics.
Yeah, it's the first year of Image. So yeah, probably seven and 12 comics total. A long and storied relationship. All right, Steve, we got you. We've invited you on. Tell the audience why we've invited you on.
Well,
you're a great guy, man.
Well, I try to be.
And a Canadian treasure. And a Canadian treasure.
Yes, Canadian treasure.
Well, I suppose I'm here today to try and plug my newest comic, which I'm actually running a Kickstarter for. At the moment, called Muskoka. Muskoka is sort of the love child of a scary story, and I had something really clever to say that didn't work out. Muskoka is a scary story. It's a horror tale about a young woman who wanders into the wood to discover a new tribe, a new group of people. And things obviously don't go as planned, and it all ends up very horribly. It's been described as a cerebral horror, so something for your mind.
But there's monsters.
There are monsters.
Cerebral horror, I assume no monsters.
It's the monsters are a small part of it. To be completely honest, there's monsters in it, and I love monsters, and I'll throw them in wherever I can. But it's so much more to that. The monsters are a means to an end in that sense. It's a much grander story than just the sort of shallow facade.
And this is
because your Kickstarter page is lying to me here, because I see nothing but pictures of monsters.
He knows what sells, Chris. He knows what sells.
No, you're right. The Kickstarter page, it would be really tough to show anymore without giving away some really good chunks. Because around page 6, and it only goes up to page 5 here, things really quickly start to derail. And it quickly becomes something not different, but definitely a bit more unexpected.
And
now I've noticed that, I mean, you've already got the We Talk Comics boost, because we announced you last week you were coming on the show. You're already funded. How does that feel to fund so incredibly fast? See, I could take credit for anything, Keith.
I told Steve before he came on that we guaranteed that his Kickstarter would fund.
Oh.
Well, we funded within the first 3 days, and I was super excited. The only problem now is that I got to find a way to make it worthwhile to keep pledging towards it. Luckily, I've gotten a hold of some really talented artists, and I've got some really exciting opportunities coming up. There's going to be a lot more art added to the book, more prints and whatnot. The specific artists I cannot yet reveal, though we are, I believe it's not even 90. I actually just got another person who just pledged. I'm up to $71 away from our first big reveal. So we're getting really close to that. It's exciting because I never knew that I could put something out there and there were enough people that were interested in what I was doing to make it happen. I had considered doing Kickstarters for a long time, not for this specific comic, but just in general. But I always thought that I'd have to put it off for a few more years, until, you know, I know there's a sort of dedicated audience there. So that in itself was super exciting.
And now you're into looking at your bonus levels, your stretch goals.
Exactly. So
you've revealed one stretch goal already?
Yeah, so $800 was our first stretch goal, in which we're giving everybody buttons. Everybody loves buttons, and I love making buttons. So I'm going to sit here for 2 nights, and I'm going to press out a whole shit ton of buttons, and we're going to throw them in everyone's package. The next one coming up is going to be that big $1,000, the 1000. And that's the one where we're going to start adding more art to the comic book. We're going to start adding more pages and offer a little bit more excitement on that end. And some pretty big names, actually. I've gotten a hold of some really exciting comic book guys. The next one will be the $1,100. In which I will also share with everybody my next comic, which is written, but obviously it's not drawn yet because I'm busy trying to fund this one. But everybody's going to get that. It's like the reserve copy. And then a couple more going up, including another special guest artist. 1300 is going to be an actual printed version of The Ice Hole. My next comic.
That's the one I'm looking forward to. I actually want to see your stuff in print. There's something magical about paper. And getting a second comic book and a button, I'm very excited.
Thank you. I actually wish that I had you sitting right in front of me and not through a screen. I'd love to show you all the original pages I got here. And I did some test prints of some of the pages I already did. And I'm a print guy myself. I have a hard time reading comics on the computer. You know, I have a couple review copies and this and that and things that I browse through, but I need to hold it in my hand. There's something about the paper between the fingers.
It's okay. We've tested visual samples on the podcast before. Never gone over well. Our listeners hate when we do that. Scott's Qualchuk still sometimes tries to show us stuff.
Your descriptions aren't visceral enough.
And how far are you in the production end of the book?
In the what?
How far are you into production, into the art?
So the story is completely written. The pages, penciled and inked, are 3/4 done, and then the coloring is, I'm 10 pages in, so I should be done still well before the end date of the Kickstarter. That being said, if things keep going as they are, and I keep raising money at the rate that I'm raising, I might have to push it back even more, a couple extra days just so that I can get more people on board to make this even more worthwhile. The goal of this Kickstarter was never to walk away with this big bag of money. It was never to walk away with any sort of real profit. It was always just to print the comic. So now that I've gone over and above, I got to find a way to give it all back to the people who have been supporting me.
Son of a bitch, I thought I was supporting a black and white comic book. At the reasonable prices you can get in on your Kickstarter, I was kind of... Oh, God, now it's full of color? I'm out, man. You just lost me.
And it comes with a button. Now how much would you pay?
No, I'm really happy with the response. It's actually really great that you guys have me on the show. That's it's really encouraging. And it's hard to make this stuff without some sort of encouragement. It's really tough to go home at the end of the day and try to work this stuff and do it till 1 o'clock in the morning because you have to work a day job without some sort of encouragement, without somebody standing behind you saying, hey, that's okay. That looks cool. So, no, that's great. Thanks, guys.
No worries. And we're both big fans of your first book. It was actually, I blanked on the title. Read the thing three times. I blanked on the title.
The man, I want to say the man who wasn't there. Oh, God. I don't know
man
either.
Man outside the window.
Outside the window. Oh, what? God, no, I'm quoting Coen Brothers movies now.
What's that actually your... what's that actually...
That was a black and white movie, if that helps.
What's The Man Outside the Window your first work?
No, I've done a few before that. Short stories, okay. Lots of short stories.
And if you read the Kickstarter page, they're available as the rewards that we shouldn't get, according to the Kickstarter. That no one in their right mind... should want these books.
Oh, that's right. That,
I believe that's a quote.
That,
yes.
And that is the level that I've supported that. So
yeah. So that's a funny story. That book specifically, I printed it 2 years ago, and it wasn't my first comics, but they were the first ones that I printed myself and kind of put together myself. And I collected them into one book, and it's just a, you know, standard one issue size book, 32 pages, and it's got three different stories in it, but they're not good stories. Like they're really, really bad. Like I did them all over the course of like a month, and I didn't edit them and I didn't proofread my book before I sent it off, and they're, besides the stories just being completely awful, the art in some of it is pretty bad too. There's one story that's particularly really racist and rather offensive. And there's all sorts of spelling mistakes. The
Jay Lee method.
Yeah, the first page of it actually has a sort of artist bio, and I didn't even capitalize my own name. But I was so gung-ho to get these books printed, and I got this great quote from this printer, and I went out, and I printed 2,000 of these books.
So this book you're not happy with, you will have for the rest of your life, is what you're saying.
I actually look for excuses to throw it out. I'm like, oh, the cover's scuffed. I gotta get rid of this one. Nobody's gonna want that one.
I cannot find any kindling for the bonfire. I know.
If you guys have a bird whose cage needs to be lined, like I got these books.
You need to take like a Sharpie to it and redact it. Just like all the just big black bars wherever you don't like. You're unhappy with something.
I don't think I have nearly enough time to go through, I think, the remaining 1,800 copies of this book and redact every single one of them.
Oh, that's...
Is there a sick compulsion in me that I now want to up my contribution to his Kickstarter just to see this book?
I would never encourage you to pay money for it.
See if you can get an ACAD student intern to do the redacting for you. and pay stubs. Get them to, they could just do some pay stuff over anything. Like, they'll be like, I saw that one time in any book. I was flipping through, and there's like, there was one panel that had been pasted on. Like, they were so unhappy with it that after it was printed, they actually stuck.
Oh, no.
Like, whatever was under it. And of course, like, you couldn't tear it off. You couldn't pull it off without destroying the comic. So, like, whatever was under it was so bad.
Lost in the annals of history. Yeah, they're bad. And I gotta find a way to get rid of them. So I snuck them into that reward. But I would never encourage anybody to buy them. I don't even carry them to shows anymore. It's just bad.
They're all inscribed. Sorry, Stephen.
I mean, you should all back, or you should all up your pledges so that you can pick up that book, because it's a gem.
I'm kind of curious. When did it dawn on you that it was a bad book?
When I showed up and my fiance, girlfriend at the time, was telling me all about how this pallet of comic books had showed up on our doorstep, and she had hauled every single box in the house, and there was like 20 boxes. And I opened up the first one and realized that my first name hadn't been capitalized on the very first page. I realized I'd been a little overzealous at that initial point.
Well,
no, I think we do have to calculate a little, because you seem to be a very modest guy. Your Kickstarter looked awesome. It was well done. I would have supported it whether I knew you or not. And then I look at what you're asking. $700 was your minimum thing. Funded in 3 days. So I think we really have to count, like, some of your modesty in there. Because, obviously, if you look at any of this art, you got it going on that count. And I can't find any spelling errors in your Kickstarter. So, I think you might be just a little bit critical on yourself. Am I reading you right here?
Sometimes. Not on that specific book. That book is legitimately really bad. but I am very critical of myself. Almost intentionally so, but I am very critical of myself.
So don't listen to him. He does awesome stuff. Get his Kickstarter.
I'm going to share a story with you, Stephen, to just admit, because what you're really describing is it's your baby pictures book. You've got 2,000 copies of your baby pictures, 1,800 now of your baby pictures. So when I was 19, I was part of a group of comic creator hopefuls. Most were design students. My older brother was involved, and through just sheer force of will and partnership with the local comic store, this is when I was living on Prince Edward Island, we self-published a comic and called Subterranean by Design. And we put all the art together. It was all, you know, hard copy art. We drove it to the printer, because they were going to do the scan and do the thing. They thought it was kind of neat that they would do a comic for the first time ever. So my older brother and I drove it into town, whole thing together, had all the pages in order, had sorted everything out. And they're like, okay, so what are the exact measurements? And I had a comic in my hand probably every day since I was 3 years old. I didn't have a comic that day. And my older brother didn't have one. There wasn't one in the car. There were no stores nearby, because that was when comics were starting to fade from the corner stores. So we phoned up one of the guys and said, hey, I need you to measure a comic book so that we know how big this thing should be. And he said, well, it's about 8 by 10.5. And I'm like, about? He's like, oh, yeah, yeah. No, I've got it right here. Yeah, that's what it is. So that's why we had 1,000 copies of a book that is 1/4 inch too big, and a quarter inch too narrow.
But it makes it really easy to find in a long box.
Yes, because it's the one that's all folded over because the top of the long box is smooshed it down. It is just high enough to like bang it. I do actually have copies of it. I've never brought it out to me to summon, but I should at some point.
Do you have multiple copies? Like lots of them?
No, I think I've got maybe two or three of each one. I 2 weeks ago I was in Vancouver to see Billy Idol in concert, which was amazing. And nice. I had lunch with one of the guys who worked on the comic. I have not seen him since we did the signing for the first issue. We have communicated through social media over the past year or so, but I had not seen him in person in over 20 years. And we had lunch. It was fantastic. We met at a comic store and then went for a beer and caught up. It was fantastic. We thought back to those days, told some funny stories about the making of, but I worked on three issues. They produced five total, before it all folded up, before the well ran dry. Some neat stuff and a couple of folks who actually, Sandy Crothers, who did a bunch of Captain Canuck stuff, had worked on it. He was one of the key guys. He was one of the only guys that had worked professionally. He did the art on the original Men in Black comics, actually. He was one of the guys that worked on the book.
I actually never knew that about that comic book. I knew it existed. I've always kept an eye out for it because I knew it would be easy to spot. But
I'll bring it to the next summit. I'll bring the issues to the next summit. I created it was the home of my I submitted a story idea, a series idea to New England Comics when I was about 16 or 17 that New England did not pick up, obviously. And that's what ended up in that was one of the stories that was my running story in the book, Dr. V and the Violent Commandos.
In your defense, New England never published anything but the Tick.
They did not. They had submission guidelines, despite having never published anything else. They published the Tick spinoffs, and then a weird EC reprint series. I think is the only thing they ever printed that wasn't the Tick.
That was probably a bad company to submit.
It was. I did submit stuff to Marvel. I have a very.
And I've read your pitch for your new universe.
Yeah, I submitted it. I submitted a concept for a new universe reboot, and I have a fantastic, very polite rejection letter from Mark Gruenwald, legendary editor.
Oh wow!
Wrote one special. It is written specifically to me. And hassles me for the method that I took, but very gracious.
I believe I have some of his remains within arm's reach. So.
you have a first Prince Squadron Supreme.
Yes.
Awesome. So everyone has those. That when you're making the big time image money, that will be your funny stories too.
The big time image money. We'll see if that happens. Image. Right now, it's making the comics for fun. The funny bucks.
Sex Criminals is signed a TV deal now, so anything's possible.
Yeah, but you hear about that every other week. Like, what was it? Rat Queens was signed for some cartoon, but I haven't heard anything about that since.
BBC, I believe it's in production.
Is it?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you hear a lot of. I mean, a development deal doesn't mean it ever hits the screen. There's exactly. A lot of steps in the middle.
No. But it means somebody's getting paid something.
Yeah. Peter Panzerfaust is theoretically going to be a series. They did something. They produced something that no one's ever seen in animated form.
Not on this side. I've actually heard of that one. That one was released.
Was it really released? Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I wonder if it slipped on YouTube.
I've never seen it. This is just something I've heard.
I wonder if it slipped onto YouTube.
Oh, okay. Maybe we should just shut the podcast down and go search for Lawrence. We're big fans of Peter Panzerfaust here at We Thought Comics.
And rightly so.
Oh, yeah.
All right. I'll be looking for that. I'll be searching the YouTube and everything. Calling in some favors. I must still know someone in the UK.
think we're all Googling it right now.
If you find a link there, Keith, do send it to me.
So yeah, it is the time of the. I think we are almost at the comic book singularity. I saw a lot of people during the Oscars making jabs about, because there were a couple of jokes at comic book movies' expense, and then they're like, well, but isn't like half of the people nominated for like the acting awards in a comic book movie? We're now almost at the comic book singularity where more comics are based on. More movies are based on comic books than aren't.
Well, I had this realization today when I heard that if Constantine is not picked up, the Sci-Fi Channel might. And I started thinking, you know, if none of the comic book stuff has got canceled this season, I get it. We won. This is getting a little bit tiresome. I'd like to go back to being that comic book geek in the corner saying, this is what you should do.
It is a weird, for Chris and I who have been in this world, been in this fandom for 30 years or more, 30 years plus, 30 years as like, you know, aware of it, and probably, you know, 38 as holding our hands. It is weird when people come up and say, have you heard about Guardians of the Galaxy? Yes, I've heard of them. Why have you heard of them? It is an odd reversal too. There's so much content that, tons of stuff coming out now that people don't know is based in comics because of the mistaken impression that, you know, comics are superheroes. Certainly no one, Kingsman, no one knows that's based on a comic book.
No, I think you're 100%. Correct. I'm actually the one comment I always make about comics and movies based thereof is I'm surprised it didn't happen sooner. Why weren't people catching on to it years and years and years ago? Right. It's almost a blueprint. You pick up a comic book and you've got the storyboards right there. You know,
because it was fucked up so badly every time they did.
Well, but there was so much non-superhero stuff out there, and there's the idea that everything that that it had to be campy. Like, I mean, the Batman TV, even Wonder Woman, like all the stuff that had been produced had that camp level and that non-serious level.
Yes.
And but yeah, you're right. I mean, Sin City is exactly treated that way, and so was 300. That was the entire concept behind them is, it's the storyboard already. Don't screw with it. Like, you don't have to start again. It is the storyboard.
But could you imagine if somebody had stuck a straw into Max Allen, Collins' brain 10 years earlier?
Yeah, why wasn't there a Mystery TV series in the '80s?
Yeah, that would have.
There
rocked.
Was a John Sable one. To be fair, that lasted 6 weeks. And it is available on YouTube, and it is awful.
Yeah, where's my...
Are they
rock?
All on...
Oh, yeah. They were all at one point. I
there goes my weekend.
It's not a whole weekend. I think it's 6 episodes. So 5 or 6 episodes.
Yeah, but if you pause them every 10 minutes, it can take longer.
It has its fun. I've
took
it.
Me 4 days to watch the Doctor Strange TV movie.
Well, that's fair. I mean, you need some walking around time afterward. You can only watch it. You need about 10 minutes, and then you kept. It's a bit like taking mushrooms. It's 10 minutes of using it, and then you need a few hours to cool off. You just absorb Doctor Strange the movie, and listen to some quiet music.
I think like House. An actual comic book guy was in charge of that one. It wasn't Grell, of course.
No, no. I'm trying to remember who...
He was also showrunner on the 90s Flash.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Might have been Loeb, actually.
Loeb would be too early for Loeb, I think. Loeb only... No, it would have been too early. I mean, Loeb didn't get his break.
Talk among yourselves. I'll be looking this up.
Wait, who are you looking for? The director?
The showrunner on obscure television series based on a comic book made in the 80s. Yeah, this is gonna be easy.
That's all I can do of that before I get sued by the rights holders of that song. I've had enough threats for one day.
So let's get back to the Kickstarter here. I've always been curious. We've talked to several Kickstarter people. How hard was it? Did you find to actually set up your Kickstarter?
To set it up wasn't terribly difficult. Time consuming. Definitely time consuming. I've looked at a ton of Kickstarters over the past couple weeks, just kind of comparing mine to others. And I've backed a ton in the past few years. Like, I've backed 68 Kickstarters in total. So I always kind of had in mind what the format would be too. And I have this habit of taking lots of sort of process shots and ongoing sort of snapshots of what I'm doing or where my coffee mug is at the time. So it was just a sort of small process of trying to format all of that into one little section. And I'm okay at rambling on paper. So that kind of all fit together nicely. It wasn't that bad.
Damn it, I only have 60 projects backed. Keith, can you beat us?
I doubt I'm even close to that, I'll be honest.
I'll be able to tell you in 2 seconds.
By the end of the podcast, I'm going to support 8 more that don't have the hope of funding just to get my numbers up.
I've only done 13. They're all comics, though. So, you know, give me that one. Give me that they are 13 comic projects. And I'm looking at one. I'm like, did I ever get that? There's one of them I'm not positive I ever got. I'll have to go back through my emails because I'm pretty sure I don't have them. And there's at least one I got twice. So, you know, that's good. That kind of averages out. Yeah. There's another one I've seen. Our pal Matthew, who did The Chair's Hiatus, I saw photos on his Twitter the other day that he's got those sitting in his house, so they're coming soon. Looking forward to that.
Nice.
I will say I've supported the Kickstarter of every Kickstarter creator that has been on the show. Did that too.
There you go. On purpose?
Or No, you didn't support... Heroic. They've been on the show.
Oh, did I miss one?
Yeah, you missed the show.
I wasn't on that episode, that's why.
Yeah, you weren't on that episode.
It didn't get the Keith bump. That's
no.
Did it fund, though?
Oh, yeah, it funded. It funded as soon as we announced it the week before.
That's the usual pattern, yeah. Everyone's got to be into it long before it's cool. Like, oh, I was supporting that Kickstarter before Steven was even on the show.
Surprisingly, it doesn't work with Indiegogo.
Not as much.
We have never supported an Indiegogo campaign that's funded.
Really? Have we not?
No!
No, that's not true. That's not true. Didn't Ryan do one through Indiegogo? It wasn't, the Tiger Lawyer was done through Indiegogo.
Yeah. Was it? Okay.
Yeah, one of the Tiger Lawyers was done. Yeah, because I have a print, and I couldn't figure out why I had a print. And then it came back to me.
I didn't realize.
We've paused while Steve looks up stuff on the internet. He's really gotten into the spirit of the show.
I have. I want to be a part of this conversation.
Oh,
no.
Steve, if you haven't read Tiger Lawyer, you're missing something special.
What is
Tiger Lawyer about?
It's about a practicing lawyer who is also a Bengal tiger.
At the same time.
But coincidentally, it's not one isn't the causation of the other. He just... it's not like
No, I didn't realize he had done that. I actually went and saw him today. He was doing a signing at Alpha Comics.
Oh, fantastic! Yeah, Ryan's there's a good plug. Ryan has if you haven't read his fantastic Dave from Monkey Brain, it just started in print from IDW, and also his new book from Boom Curbstomp came out today as we record this. So yeah, he's at our pal Alpha Comics. Doing a signing, and it is the year that everything's coming up Ferrier. It is, and he's, I believe it's next month is his first issue of Sons of Anarchy. So a lot happening for him.
That's exciting.
I can't wait till IDW actually does the Dave trade paperback. I can't convince myself to go out get the single issues because I've already bought them digitally. When I didn't think there was a hope of ever getting a print copy of it, but it's such an awesome series, I do want to get the trade.
I haven't read it yet, though I will endorse Curbstomp. I picked it up, and it was the first thing I read when I got home today. It's a great little punk rock.
Dave is the one comic book, no matter who we talk to, when we actually asked, without them having listened to the show most times, they'd say, have you read this book, Dave? Like, yes, we were 6 months before you. We know that, dude. It just kept coming up. Like, just other creators would mention how good this book was.
It is a really stellar work, and we've been... We've been back in Ryan's place since the very beginning, and it's been worth it every step of the way.
And Curbstomp, I haven't read it yet. I have bought it, but I haven't read it. But it looks to be everything that that Matt... Oh. Bitch.
Wow, Chris has developed Tourette's.
Yeah.
That was a twist I did not see coming in the episode.
I'll be back to you on that.
While Chris is considering what words he wants to use, I will also plug on Comixology as of today is Uncaged from Taylor Stoft, who was also on our Comic Summit, Comic Creator Summit. This is a graphic novel. It's 40 pages for this issue and 99 damn cents. That's on Comixology Submit as of today. So I grabbed that. I have not had a chance to read it, but Taylor was on the summit. He was also one of my guests for a panel at the Calgary Comic and Entertainment Expo in 2014. Taylor was brave enough to bring pages of Uncaged for our friends Riley Rossmo and Scott Kowalczyk to do critique on. Uncaged is Taylor's first work, so big shopping list for Calgary.
And what I was trying to say is Curbstomp is everything that Bitch Planet wasn't.
Oh, that's... Now we're talking.
No, I just couldn't remember that second word. not a fan of Kelly Sue DeCormick.
Nor am I, gotta be honest. But God bless her for making it.
But I keep buying the issues because it's called Bitch Planet.
You're not the only one.
I think I would.
Better title than comic book.
I think I would be. I would buy a Bitch Planet T-shirt. I wasn't much. I was pretty so-so on the comic, but I would buy that T-shirt. Mm-hmm. I even though it would break my rule of not wearing anything ironically.
I just can't believe there's a women in prison comic book out there that I don't like.
That's a tough one. That's a tough one.
It's like having a monkey comic book out there that I don't like.
Maybe you just can't relate to it because you're not a woman.
But I like every other... I like women in prison movies.
I think that Steve may have hit on what's going on, though. Bitch Planet may not be created from the same place of art as women in prison films.
Old bitch planet.
There may be a different creative drive.
I mean, it's not quite Lady Death, and it's not quite Razor, right?
It's not so much Caged Heat. It's it's more Orange is the New Black rather than Caged Heat, I think.
Yeah, I was gonna make some snide comment about all the people who ran out the day that it was released and got their non-compliant tattoo, but then I realized that I'd take the higher ground and defend all the women who are empowering comics.
There's bunches of those. I just don't think Kelly Sue DeCormick is one of them.
I'm gonna say two things. One is it's DeConic. Let it go the first time.
DeConic.
The second is that I've really embraced the past few months that I'm gonna make sure I word this right. I have accepted that I am a middle-aged white dude. And I have embraced the idea that there is stuff that is not for me, and that's fantastic. I can't possibly read all the comics that come out anyway. Chris tries, so you know he's coming from a different place than I am. He tries. He gives it the best go. There's 5,000 comics ish distributed through Diamond every year, and Chris gives it the old college try.
Yes, and I will say today I bought a second. I bought a comic twice. they republished Big Zeke. I was a big supporter of the Big Zeke comic book. I pushed it on a show like 3 months back. They did a damn reprint, man. Digitally.
Well, I mean, you just said that you you're going to buy Dave a second time, but a third seems excessive.
Digitally twice is ridiculous.
A completely different PDF, though.
Is there more back matter? Did you get a variant cover at least?
I got a variant cover.
All right.
Go for that one again. It's the 90s again. Let's just roll.
I like to open up the comic to the cover and then play with the brightness on my tablet and pretend it's Chromium. Like, oh hey, it's just as I reflect the light. Oh yes, that is one thing they have not figured out how to do in digital is the variant covers, because it turns out that with Google I have access to every variant cover digitally.
I think they should start taking advantage of GIFs, more GIFs in digital comics.
I have to agree. The comics all jap. Obviously, as the technology.
Now, Bitch Planet with animated GIFs may actually be the book you're looking for, Chris.
You know, I would like to give you the middle finger right now, because I'm coming off as a misogynist, but unfortunately, you're kind of right.
I know the target audience. I'm like, you know, my marketing instinct. Oh man, this went a strange direction.
Actually, it's funny that we're talking about the differences between print and digital media and what people are pushing. I'm trying to look up his name right now, but the guy on the brand new Grant Morrison book coming out called Nameless, colorist for it. Can't find
Nathan,
his name.
Is it Nathan Fairbank?
Might
he's
be.
He's been doing the Multiversity books. I don't know if he's exclusive, though.
Did you ever read the article that he wrote about what he planned on doing differently with this, with the digital version of the comic?
No.
Because he was talking, and this might just be an artist thing, but there's a big difference between your RGB and your CMYK in terms of you print with CMYK and you view things on your computer in RGB.
Right.
And RGB has a much larger array of colors that it can portray, quite especially in the really brilliant sort of bright neon-y colors. And when you print that, it just dulls it. You'll never get it, which is a shame because it means that there's this whole other spectrum of colors that are completely unavailable to print medium, which is an interesting way of looking at it because he wrote this whole article about how he's going to make Nameless his sort of love child to play with it in RGB and do all this wonderful stuff that he can't do in the actual printed version of it. So there might actually be a comic that you want to buy twice. One digitally and one on one in print.
Yeah, Nathan Fairbairn. I don't know how to pronounce his last name. Fairbairn. Bairn? Barn? Barron? Barron, I'm going to give a shot. Nathan Fairbairn. he did an excellent blog on the Multiversity Pax Americana, because he did the colors on that too, and incredible work. He's one of the top guys in the field right now. Yeah. So I'll have to take a look for that, because that's someone we should have on the show, actually. We've never had a colorist on. And it is an area that, I mean, actually his blogs about showing process on Pax Americana was one of the things that made me pay much closer attention to color over the last little while. Steve, on your book, what is your, are you working traditional? Do you work digital? Is it a mix? How do you get your unique color look that you have to the book?
This one is a mix. So all the pages are drawn in ink traditionally. I'm far more skilled, I suppose I could say. Traditionally, I can't get the same sort of lines or the same quality of line work digitally. And it could just be my tools. I have this tiny little bamboo Wacom thing beside me. Maybe one day I'll save up and actually be able to afford a tablet monitor. But, and then the color is, it's actually two tones, and it's done with a lighter pastel-y sort of green and a darker green. And the entire book is going to be based on those two tones, and that's done digitally. And it'll be the first comic that I guess I'm releasing that I've ever done this extent of digital work on it. Like my last one, The Man Outside the Window, was completely painted by hand. So it was all done with ink and brush.
Wow, it's some really cool shadow effects that you've got just in the sample pages that you have. It's amazing until you mentioned that I didn't realize that it was only two tones from the way that you mix and match and use them for shadow effects, etc.
Yeah, the idea of this wasn't so much to, I didn't want to color the book. I wanted to, what I'm calling spot shading, and I don't know if that's a fair sort of description of what I'm doing, but I wanted to use it to, instead of just plainly coloring in expanses of space, I wanted to use it to either emphasize or the word that I keep coming back to is enhance the line work. So it's not really coloring in that sense. It's just another quality of line.
Thank you for the save for calling me the pages you presented on your Kickstarter as black and white. They were greeny. Oh, God, this seems to be a theme today. I'm wrong about everything.
It's the same idea, though. It'd be no different if I had done it in gray tones. I just used the green to kind of... It suited the foresty motif.
Yeah, it's a very... it's a very nature thing, but it's interesting how you play with that darker tone of green... to create some ominous, and a more ominous feel, like the woods are dark and deep, that's for sure.
Mm. Like I said, I wish I had more that I could show you right here, right now. There's scenes later that employ that even greater. I just finished page 9, and there's a great scene where she's running around in the woods, and it's almost pitch black, except for little spots of color here and there that kind of emphasize her journey. It's different. It's a different sort of methodology, I suppose, to coloring. I've mostly been a black and white artist, for what I've done comic-wise anyways. So this is very experimental in that aspect.
Well,
do you particularly like teeth? Because you seem to draw a lot of them.
Not on my people, though.
No, not on your people. But there are some other things in here that seem to have a lot of teeth.
They're creepy teeth. They're like filter teeth.
Yes.
It does look a bit like the filter on my vacuum cleaner. Do they have a specific number of teeth, or do you just do teeth until it fills? That would be a bit much. Like, it's 102 on top. It's 104 on the bottom. That really off-puts people.
God, you know, that would be so cool if that was a plot point for some reason.
There's one of your tiers. There's at $1,700, all of the monsters get the same number of teeth.
I go back and I redraw every monster in the comic with your specified number of teeth.
Do you have a lucky number of teeth? It can be that number. It's the dentist's issue. Like, you need a dentist.
Oh, God. Yeah, there has to be some sort of dentist registry that you could mass email all the dentists.
How do these guys even brush? It's raising more questions, really. Now everyone has to look at the art, though, because this is one of those things that we're now describing things that we can't tell you on the podcast. All right. Well, I think you have your Kickstarter is running. It runs. It's running until what's the date that it wraps up?
Wraps up on March 18th at 5:00.
All right. So that's how long you have to get on board. Get the fabulous. Had the fabulous incentives. Get the incentives that Steve doesn't want you to have, which it sounds like you're going to end up with that one anyway. At one level, you can get enough to make like bricks. They'll just glue the pages together, so they're just solid bricks of the comic.
Oh, damn you! Now I want to build a house out of it. I've got a huge comic book collection. I could own property.
Oh, that's right. That must at some point have been one of the things the settlers used. They built them out of hay. They built them out of wood. They built them out of sod. It's almost sod. I mean, really, it's...
Did the early settlers have comic books?
Sounds like...
They're making them with early copies of Cerberus.
Sounds like a Zen Koan. Did the early settlers have comic books? What's the sound of one hound clapping? And did the early settlers have comic books? You can work on either one of those. Are you doing any shows this year? Any cons this year, Stephen?
I'm actually only doing one show this year, and that's because I'm getting married in the summer, so all my money's going that way. So the one show that I will be at this year is the Calgary Comic Book and Entertainment Expo, the big one.
Fantastic. And we will, of course, be at that show. We're talking to, we're in talks with the folks from the Entertainment Expo about, panels, running panels there. We ran several last year. So we got a couple of interesting things, a couple of irons in the fire there. So expect we'll have NWE Talk Comics presence. I'll be covering the show for Comicosity.
and doing some interviews on site. Haven't heard too many names yet, but intrigued by the ones we have heard. I'm going to Phoenix Comic Con in May. So any of our listeners who are going to be at Phoenix Comic Con, send me a note on Twitter, and we'll see about meeting up there, having a lunch or a beverage. I'm excited for the non-comic guests. Every comic fan does the same thing when it comes to cons. We grumble that there aren't enough comic presents, and then they announce that, like, for example, Allison Hannigan is going to be at the Phoenix Comic Con, and I'm like, I don't care who's turning up for. Sure, there's comic creators. It'll all be fine. But Allison Hannigan's going to be there.
No. I'm excited for the Calgary one because Terry Reid's going to be there. And I don't want to see her, but I want to see Keith.
That's
see
right.
Her.
I was going to do a photo op with the cast of Sharknado. And then Chris pointed out that if I do a photo just with Terry Reid, I'm getting a photo with part of the cast of Josie and the Pussycats. And that's, like, way more.
Yes, and I found a place online you can buy little Josie and the Pussycat ears for both you and her.
Yeah, I need to look at
that. Actually, I think we need to do a We Talk Comics lineup.
That would be awesome. Oh, my God, that'd be brilliant. I wonder if we could get her to put on. If we could get her to put on.
If we bring them, I think she might wear them.
we can at least give it. Or we'll have a weird photo where three of us are wearing ears and she's not. Which I'm okay with that too. That seems funny enough.
Oh, I'm sure if we bring a couple bills to stick somewhere, it might work out.
You're gonna get a bad reputation after this episode.
Enough of the show, she's probably got it written in her contract that she will not put on pussycat ears for.
We don't want to mess her hair up. I mean, come on. See. Or ground floor for photo with Aquaman. That's Jason Momoa is going to be there.
That's right.
Aquaman before he's Aquaman.
What can we get Aquaman to wear?
I did a couple of years ago when the Norman Reedus and Sean Patrick Flannery who are the Boondock Saints. My wife is a giant fan of Norman Reedus and could not make it to the show. So she printed off a photo of herself that I got Norman Reedus to hold up in the photo that I got taken. It is awesome. They were so cool. I said, my wife's a huge fan. She couldn't make it. He's like, no problem, man. Like, put on his best cool dude thing. Yeah. That was hilarious. Yeah. That was a far cry from the when I got my photo with Stan Lee, and they told us, they reminded us the line over and over: "Do not talk to Stan, do not touch Stan." Someone loudly shouting out, "Do not touch Stan Lee!" was worth the price of admission itself, right there.
Yeah, but you followed him to the bathroom instead, or was that Brett?
Brett stalks everyone in the bathroom. That's kind of his thing.
I feel bad for the guy now. I had a buddy tell me this story, and he says, Stan Lee has turned into nothing but this sad Pokemon. They said, he was telling me about this story of how his buddy had gone out, and he had commissioned this wonderful Spider-Man picture, and he had this speech bubble coming off of him, and he left it blank because he wanted to go and meet Stan Lee and get Stan Lee to write Excelsior or something in it, right? But he goes up and he gets in line, and he's just about to talk to Stan Lee, and Stan Lee's agent comes up and he says, "Hey, you know, can I get Stan Lee to write whatever in this?" And the agent said, "No." He said, "Contractually, he's only allowed to write his name. He's only allowed to write Stan Lee."
So also doesn't look up when you pay $25 for your...
And don't touch
him. So he goes up and he hands this Spider-Man picture to Stan Lee, and sure enough, Stan Lee goes and he signs right in the speech bubble, "Stan Lee." And that was a Stan Lee experience. So now he's got this picture of a Spider-Man Stan Lee saying, "Stan Lee!"
I love sad Pokemon. That was a great one.
I think we have the title for our show.
Oh, yeah, that's my Stan Lee story. My Stan Lee story that isn't my story.
well, there's another episode you got to hear of ours is the convention stories episode. I can't remember what we called it. It was con stories.
Oh God, are we just doing embarrass Chris week?
That was
I've
a great
already
episode.
Made a fool of myself several times.
We're not telling the stories again.
Someone has to be telling embarrassing stories.
Steven can air that podcast. He doesn't. It would be really weird if he actually just started listening to that podcast while we're recording this podcast. That would be a strange turn of events. I don't know what to tell you, Brett. The episode's 4 hours long because we sat in for an hour and a half while Steve listened to one of our other episodes. It was meta. It's episode 125, except for partway through when it's episode 56.
Speaking of which, I've been meaning to broach the subject of commentary tracks on our podcasts.
I think we kind of may have to do them live. Like, we might have to do that, like, instead of a beers on the patio. One of the days where it's too cold to do beers on the patio, we'll do beers while we're watching a movie.
That could work.
The weird part about doing a commentary episode is that we can't use the audio from the movie that we're watching, gives it a whole weird,
I meant commentary on our own podcast.
Oh, okay. So you want to play one of our own podcasts and
and speak over top of it.
Yeah. Now you're really meta. Well, to be fair, there's huge swaths of empty space after I say most anything.
Which our fantastic editor Brett actually takes care of most of the time.
You're right there. That was a spot that Mo could get a whole speech.
May or may not have been intentional.
All right, we're gonna wrap this bad boy up. Steve, tell him how to find you and how to find your Kickstarter. And how awesome it would be if this for you.
I'm easy to find on Facebook at Stephen Charles Rosia, or even on Twitter at Stephen Rosia, R-O-S-I-A. If you're looking for me elsewhere, my personal website is www.withoutatitle.com. And my comic book that is currently funding and would love your support is called Muskoka, and that is easy to find if you just search Muskoka in Kickstarter. It'll pop right up there. Love to have you aboard. The more people we can get on board, the more exciting stuff we can get done. Like I said, we're not even $80 away from announcing a very exciting guest artist. So I'd love to have you a part of it.
Fantastic. And you can find me on Twitter at CupReporterK. You can follow We Talk Podcasts on Twitter. You can like We Talk Podcasts on Facebook. We love for you to engage with us and tell us everything you like about the show. And anything you don't like about the show, really take that to Facebook. Because even negative comments on one of our Facebook posts would really boost the share rate on the Facebook post. So it's gold, really. Like, that's where to go if you don't like something. Comments on the website's fine, but really, comments on the Facebook articles would be awesome. you've heard this episode, so you've found some way to listen to it. You can hear it on our website, wetalkpodcast.com. You can subscribe to us on iTunes. Give us a review if you haven't. I think we have two reviews. We could use a third. Stitcher. We're on Stitcher. We're on the Comic Book Podcast Network.
Are we still there?
Let's say yes. Let's say yes. for the sake of this, let's say yes. And you can email us at comics@wetalkpodcast.com. Chris, why don't you have the final word?
That all sounds like great stuff. I'm Chris _WeTalk on Twitter. Hit us up. We love talking comic books. If you like a comic book and want to talk about it, I'm sure we got guys who know about that comic book. They can inform you. We might not know, but we can refer you to somebody who does real quick. Yeah, that's it. I'm done. It's bedtime.
All right, thanks for coming on, and good luck with the rest of your campaign, Steve.
Thank you. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And we are OUT.